Three Peeps in a Podcast. Hello and welcome to the bonus show of Three Peeps in a Podcast. We've just witnessed Bristol City winning 2-1 at home to Coventry on what I think was quite a fortunate 3 points. But let's go through the starting lineup. We've got some guests today. We've got Dean Allen, who's dialing in all the way from South Africa, and we'll get on a little bit about that later as to why he's in South Africa. But also my regular co-host was supposed to be on a golf weekend, but there was rumours of his place in the squad being in doubt, so he's cancelled the golf, and he's joining us today. Matt Withers, how are you?
Hiya, Patch. Yeah, no, nothing to do with that. I know that I'm, like I said, on borrowed time, but no, unfortunately, there's a local lockdown in South Wales, so the golf got cancelled, yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah, apologies for that, but obviously you've got to witness 3 points instead, so all for the better.
Yeah, absolutely. I was I was badgering you in the week, wasn't I, that how could I get you to give me regular updates whilst I say on the fairway, probably more playing out the trees, but thankfully didn't have to and was able to watch it, yeah.
Rough. Yeah. So, yeah, Dean, thanks very much for joining us. Let's come to you first. Your thoughts on the starting 11? No one change, in fact, from last Saturday's game against Exeter, with Callas coming back in, but for De Silva, unfortunately, is due to injury. Thoughts on the starting 11?
Yeah, thanks. First of all, thanks for having me, Patch. Lovely to join you guys all the way from South Africa. It was, wasn't it a Bristol City afternoon? Talk about a roller coaster today again. Of course, like most of the listeners, I'm sure we tuned in to see Jay De Silva's name not on the starting lineup, and that was a concern. According to Downing, it was a shin problem, so let's hope that's not long term. But I wasn't surprised, to be quite honest, given the result against Exeter, that he was going to stick with the same setup, apart from Callas coming back in. Thankfully, he did come back in. We'll talk about his performance, I'm sure, as we go on today. But the starting lineup, I think, will give Dean Holden a lot to think about, because we could probably see two performances in that game today, which I'm sure we're going to discuss.
Absolutely. Yeah, it was a game of two halves, the old adage. So, yeah, Matt, what are your thoughts? Any major surprises from you, apart from De Silva, as we've said?
No, I think the new guys were obviously injured, lacking match fitness. So I don't think there was any surprise with Mawson or Martin. I guess I was probably more surprised with the bench. No sort of Joe Morrell, no Adam Nash, and Bakinson, who again, I think we'll, as you know, Dean talked about Thomas, I think we'll talk about Tyreek as well. But, you know, that surprised me. Joe Morrell in particular, after his two performances. I'm hoping, you know, I was messaging you, Patch, I'm hoping it is a case of a game on Wednesday and resting them, ready for that. But I think starting lineup, it probably picked itself, really, apart from the Silva injury.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, let's get to the game itself then. As always, in the last few years, it's been explosive start. First 5 minutes, we always get at least a chance, and sometimes we don't take it, sometimes we do. On this occasion, it only took 20 seconds to get the goal, and it was a knock over the top with Wells squaring to Pato, and a great start. It was almost too easy for the first 20 seconds, Dean.
Well, it was incredible, wasn't it? I'd like to see, actually, the record books. I don't know if that's one of the fastest goals in an opening game, probably in the Championship, I would have thought. Yeah, I sitting here watching it, I could just imagine all the City fans, you know, around the world just getting out of their seats thinking, well, here we go. I mean, it looked so simple, didn't it? I mean, looking at it back, it was a good move. Yeah, there was good link up play with Pham, and the way, you know, Wells got his head up and Pato does what he does. I mean, he finished cleanly. But I heard the commentator say perhaps they scored a little bit early. I mean, can you score too early? But that's exactly what happened, because the way Coventry just grew into that game was quite worrying, to be quite honest. I mean, we just had to sit back and they just bossed the rest of the half, to be quite honest. But we can't complain about that start, that's for sure.
What do you think it is, Matt, about our starting? It does always seem to be the first 5 minutes we'll get a chance, and sometimes that can be the only chance of the next half an hour.
And it pretty much was today, wasn't it? I mean, I don't know why it is. I don't think we caught Coventry cold. I think, like Dean said, it was just a really good move. I think everything worked. Fans sort of flick on, you know, maybe 9 times out of 10 that doesn't, you know, fall into the path as nicely as it did. I was worried. I thought that the ball across, I just worried that Pato was offside as it sort of the initial move. But again, you know, he tucked it away lovely. And then I don't know why the game changed. I think the midfield, you know, we played five in there, but Han Noah was just completely overrun. And they just controlled the game from that point. And it was the centre of the pitch. You know, I think Gary Probert was talking about, Taylor Moore or Zach Viner sort of dropping in to support. But, you know, I don't think they did that at all. And like I said, I think Han Noah just got overrun. And exactly like Dean said, Coventry grew into it and should have ended the half in front, let alone level. You know, they had one that hit the post. Bent's made a really good save. So, yeah, I think we were lucky. And really, other than the goal, I think, what was it, one Famara header?
Yeah, I was going to say, with the exception of on about 12 minutes, Zach Viner putting a lovely cross across to Zizou and a header that he probably should have done better with. But... more or less straight at the keeper. Apart from that, there was a lot of Coventry, and there was a poor clearance from Viner that led to the Coventry actually scoring the goal. Yeah. Callas looked a bit shaky at times. And Bentley, as you say, one of his saves, it's quite hard to see sometimes on Robin's TV to any sort of HD quality. And I don't know about you, Dean, watching on a phone, I think, as well. So, it wasn't until I saw the replay of that Bentley save. It was like a proper David Seaman claw, wasn't it?
Yeah.
No, he was fantastic. He actually kept us in it when you look back at that. I mean, going back to that period in the first half, it was a combination of the two things. I think, one, we couldn't keep the ball. I mean, it was shocking. We just couldn't keep possession. We couldn't find feet. I mean, I lost count of the times sort of Masengo and Pham in particular sort of lost possession. We saw that later. We'll talk about Chris Martin, his influence. But just to get someone to hold the ball and get it to stick, it just takes off so much pressure. No matter what level football you play, if you can get someone to hold the ball up, it just relieves the pressure. And then coupled with that, of course, their midfield. I mean, I don't know about you, but I could see why the likes of Liam Walsh would actually enjoy that system, because it looked like a Liam Walsh there. We had O'Hare. Hamer was influential, of course, and their wing backs were bombing on. They were just overrunning us, and I was just concerned. I was thinking, is this our system, or is it the fact that they just play their system a lot better? And I think it was probably that at that stage.
Mm. So, for me, halftime came at a good time, because I think if that had gone on five more minutes, we could have gone in 2-1 down quite easily. But came out second half. Half of me thought that there was going to be a change at halftime, and there wasn't. However, it only took 8 minutes, 10 minutes for the changes to come. And that was Chris Martin coming on for Mara Zizou, and also for Bakinson coming on for Masengo. So there was a couple of changes there. I was a bit surprised to see Zizou coming off that early. I think that's the first. But Chris Martin coming on, it is a like for like almost, although Chris Martin probably hasn't got the defensive qualities that we've relied on so much from Zizou. But yeah, let's talk a bit about the substitution. Matt, go on.
Yeah, that's that first one with Zizou. I think he just given the ball away just before the sort of decision. And I think you're swapping like for like. I mean, Pham, he put himself about, but he didn't really do too much, but he wasn't getting a lot of the service, to be fair. So I think that was the one that, you know, you could see why he brought Martin on in. And again, Dean sort of called it. He's an experienced pro at this level. He holds the ball up. He brings others into play. He's a clever footballer. He drew a couple of free kicks where he just sort of backed in.
Yeah, I know that. You know,
and it's that professionalism we've been missing.
Reminded me a bit of Harry Kane in the World Cup, the number of free kicks.
Just backing in, yeah. But Bakinson, I thought, I'm not going to say he was a revelation in, but having a physical 6 foot plus player in that centre of the pitch made such a difference. And he can pass as well, you know, he was decent. Whereas Han Noah seemed to be ratting around in, you know, he's winning the ball but not really doing too much. Bakinson just seemed to glide through it, and he'd win the ball and then he had space for himself. I think just that physical presence with him. I would say Coventry tired as well. So I think came into it. Hamer had been booked, then gave a free kick away, and the ref, you could see, said to him, look, one more, you're off. He was subbed off. So I think it changed there. But I think the best period of the game for City was after those two substitutions.
Yeah, without a doubt. I think, chaps, you know, looking back at the timing, was quite interested. I think it was 7 minutes into the second half. It was almost like he wanted to have one more look at it. But I think we've also got to respect that the guys that start do a lot of the work, and they almost, you know, take the legs of the opposition. And that's what happened, because their midfield is running the show, as I said, in the first half. But Masengo, I mean, he's an enigma, isn't he? When he first came, we all just thought he was going to be the answer. But we tend to forget his age and the fact that he's been asked to do a big job there. So when Bakinson came on, like you said, he was the physical presence. He took advantage of the fact that their middle was tiring at that stage, and he just slowed the game down, and he just put his foot on the ball, and he picked out the simple passes and kept the ball, which was the key thing. And with Chris Martin up front, and we've seen him do this for years against us, haven't we? He's got that nous to, as I said, to put his bum into the defenders and draw fouls. And you can see he's not the most mobile, but you can also see why the Derby fans really wanted to keep him for another season, because he's got that presence that we probably, and that know-how that we have been lacking at some, certainly up front.
Absolutely. And just for me on Bakinson, he just seemed to put himself in such good space. Received the ball well, found a man quite a few times, some really good completed passes that led to something coming out of it the other end.
And a couple of shots. He moved forward and had shots, which we haven't seen Han Noah doing. You know, you imagine it was the same system, so I don't know why there's that difference. But yeah, Bakinson, you know, I think he had one that the keeper pushed over, didn't he? Then he was close on another one.
The other thing I noticed, Matt, as well, was how he freed up Pato and Wyman. Up to that stage, they looked lost. I mean,
We didn't see them, did we? Wyman, you saw in the first half a couple of probably defensive runs back, but other than that, nothing. And exactly like you said, Dean, when Bakinson came on, they then actually, I mean, Wyman had a goal disallowed for offside. Pato got in the game. And before that, I was actually texting in the WhatsApp group that we had. I don't know how the both of them have stayed on, because they weren't doing anything for me. And then it changed. So,
In fact, Wyman probably arguably should have scored with that effort, you know, at the end when he clipped the bar. Yeah. But and the other thing as well, it just changed the whole dynamic. This wonderful formation, when it works, it's probably the most entertaining in football. And we could see how it freed up. Jack Hunt got further forward. Yeah. Tommy Rowe broke a few times on the left, and he's certainly first choice there.
The first 60 minutes, and again, I bore people because I keep texting Patch throughout it, but it was, you know, Tommy Rowe and Jack Hunt hadn't got out of our half in the first half. Second half, as you said, they both got crosses in, both were more involved. So when, you know, playing that five, your wing-backs have to be able to bomb forward, and you think De Silva, Sessegnon probably would be first choice. But that stemmed from having Bakinson, for me, that linchpin in the middle and opening it up.
How did you think your old favourite Taylor Moore? I don't think he was his strongest game today.
Poor. And like you say, I love him, but he's not left-sided for me, which is probably where Mawson will. But it's something, I don't know why it is, but I would say probably for the entire Johnson tenure, we just give the ball away so cheaply.
Yeah.
And needlessly, they're not difficult passes. And you know, there's one or two where it was a 5-10 yard pass, and we don't make it, and it just puts you under pressure. So, but no, I thought Taylor was poor today, if I'm honest.
Yeah, his distribution certainly. And I thought out of the back, you know, three, Viner was the one who was coming forward, at least trying to make things. I mean, he picked out Pham with that great ball for the header, and he was trying to create stuff. You know, where normally we think Taylor Moore would do that. I don't know if he was trying too hard. It was his big opportunity. It was one of his poorer games, I thought, today.
With Taylor Moore, obviously in the Exeter game last week, he was making those forward runs and looking quite like Adam Webster did in the first few games that we had him. I wonder whether it was something that he was told not to do. Is it a coaching thing? And then he had to adapt his game, and he was trying to play a slightly different game today. We won't ever know. But
I think it's the left-hand side patch. I think he's he's not left-footed, obviously, and naturally, and I think, you know, even for me when I played, when you're bringing the ball out like that, you want to come in on your natural side. So then he's coming inside, which he can't do, so he has to stay out left, and then he's struggling to play any sort of ball. I mean, he got away with a couple of really poor passes that they then broke on, didn't he?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think you know, with the addition of a couple of left-sided players, certainly left-footers, we're going to see more balance in the side, because that's something that's been missing. You know, I know we will probably talk about the signings, but, you know, someone like Chris Brunt coming in will give us that option with a Absolutely. Natural left-footer, will give us that balance. And obviously, Jay De Silva was a massive miss today. And
I think Mawson's left-footed as well, isn't he? I think he plays left.
I'm not sure.
I'm not sure if he's left-footed. Funny enough, I've been listening to a few of the podcasts this week. I'm sure right. the listeners will be able to clear that up. And a couple of people have doubted whether that's the case, but he certainly right, played okay. left of a back three.
Yeah.
Well, you mentioned that Wyman chance in, I think it was the 86th minute, where he's gone for a blast and hit the bar and gone over. Should he be blasting it there? Shouldn't he be placing that yeah. in the corner?
Yeah, well, that's Andy Wyman, the enigma, isn't it? He, you know, he drives me potty. He really does. I mean, the guy, you cannot fault his effort. Whether you'd want him, you know, you put your house on that, you know, finish. Funny enough, I was watching the replay of, as I'm sure we all do from time to time, his hat trick at Sheffield United, and it's just like a different player. Yeah. Today that's a Vyman. He will put his foot through it, and let's hope it hits the back of the net. And of course, it didn't today. And it would just be nice to have got the third, so we could all have relaxed. I was writing different endings, of course.
Yeah, you know, no, yeah, you're dead right. I mean, I think the thing, me, and I guess I get a little bit critical of Robin's TV as well, and I know that they're associated to the club, so they've got to be careful. But, you know, when you're talking about in the first half with Diju's volley, you know, it was a good effort, yeah. and then Vyman shot. No, you know, you're being paid. What you're being paid, you're on the edge of the box. You should be hitting the target. You know, there's no excuse for that.
I think it's all about
me, Vyman, I thought that was poor. You know, it was a poor effort.
It's about composure, isn't it?
Absolutely.
I often think of the, you know, someone like Andy Vyman, I suppose, if he had the composure in his work rate, he'd be playing in the Premier League. He wouldn't be playing for us, would he? But that Pham chance as well. I mean, I thought, just bring it down. He could see the defenders in front of him. He could see he had a little bit of time. I mean, just bring the thing down.
The ball's come right across the pitch, so yeah. you can set yourself. You know, we've all done it and probably missed like he's missed, but you see it coming that long way. It wasn't like it came over the top of the defender. He had that vision all the way through, and then he just drops it straight into the ground. So. Yeah,
that was a better chance for a left footer like myself. I probably would have put that.
Oh, you'd have stuck that away, Patch. No problem. Money would have been on you for that.
Anyone listening who's watched me play would know that would have gone in. but talking of a sweet left foot, Tommy Rowe had a chance in the 88th minute, which sort of came out of nothing really. But that was a lovely strike, and the keeper saved well.
Should have passed. So I am a miserable sod. Should have passed. Andy Vyman. Was 6 yard box.
Yeah.
He has to just roll it across.
It was a sweet
strike, but for me, he should have passed. Yeah.
Yeah, it reminded me a bit. Do you remember Birmingham last year? I was at Birmingham, and he can hit the ball, that's for sure. Yeah, I mean, Palmer put him through, and he hit it first time. It was exactly the same kind of effort. But no, I think you're asking a lot to beat the keeper at the near post there. And no, he should have squared it back.
But it was a good. You're right, though, Patch. It was a good strike. I mean, he caught it really well. But I think again, if you're looking at percentages, and Vyman was, you know, berating him afterwards because he just had to roll it across, didn't he?
Yeah, exactly.
So but again, you just stuck it away. I mean, it's difficult. So
yeah, but unfortunately, they never signed me on. No. But let's summarise the game. So I said at the start, I think it was a fortuitous 3 points. Obviously, a great, massive 3 points for us. It's so great to get a good start to the season. Home game, obviously, no crowds, but what can we do? But 3 points in your first game of the season, you're top of the league on points. I know they were top of the league on goal difference. Haven't even looked at the
fourth
of the results. Fourth, there we go. Well, we're in the playoff spot.
Exactly.
We'll take it. But for you, Dean, what were your thoughts overall?
Well, as I said, it was a roller coaster game, wasn't it? In terms of it went in so many sort of sections, as it were. I mean. After that first half, I was just glad to get in, you know, 1-1 at half time. But saying that, we watch it from a distance, and you've got to remember that for commentary to keep that intensity off, it must have taken a lot, even though they did make changes. They took off Hamer, various people that were influencing it, and we did grow into it. I was concerned. I thought, oh my goodness, is he going to change the formation, because they were bossing it, but he didn't. It just showed you that just by changing one or two in terms of, you know, individual personnel, we can actually change the game without changing a formation as such. And they actually, the interesting point was they changed their formation slightly to sort of counter us as well, which I thought was interesting. The hold up play of Martin made a difference. He's obviously going to be an option going forward. We don't know about Pham going forward. We know what Pham can offer us. There was a couple of times that he's more useful in our own box sometimes. I mean, a block he put in was goal saving again today. Yeah. I think we probably, given that second half and the way Coventry didn't really offer much, I think we probably just deserved it. Maybe that's my red glasses looking at it. I couldn't have moaned about a draw. I'm glad we didn't lose it, because at one stage I thought the wheels were going to come off. But I think Dean Holden's going to look back at that today and going to learn so much about certain players and the way we reacted. And it was so interesting how just bringing on Bakinson for Masengo, how he just unlocked so many of the other players, didn't it? And that was the key for me.
I totally agree. I mean, I think if you looked at the game, probably they shaded the first half, but we'd scored. The second half, we I wouldn't say shaded it. I think the last sort of 20, 30 minutes, it was very much all us. So I think on that balance, they didn't really create anything in the second half. So we probably did just about shade it.
Matt, who's your man of the match for today?
Thomas Callas. I thought some of his blocks, he was back to his kind of best from that. Again, I kind of go against probably some of the things I've said before, but I thought Tommy Rowe had another good game. He was solid. He was definitely a 7 out of 10 again.
That's the thing with Tommy Rowe, Matt. He is a constant 7 out of 10.
I've been critical of him, and probably because I don't think he gets forward enough from that point of view. But again, I forget he's playing in a position that he's not played the majority of his career in. But he didn't let us down today. I think Bentley would have run close as well because of the way that he did. And other than that, you probably would say Bakinson and Martin had more influence than other players that had probably played more minutes. They had more influence than Andy Vyman and Pato. I know Pato scored. There's a lot. There were some positives, but I think there were also a few that you'd look at and say, I still worry about the creativity in that team. We didn't, until the last 10, 15, we didn't have a lot of width. We weren't getting balls in the box enough. And when you've got players like Naki Wells, I don't want Naki Wells dropping back in on the halfway line and picking the ball up. I want him in the 6-yard box. So that's my fear. And I look at it and think, he's got Walsh, he's got Morrell, he's got Williams. How you fit those three in with an Andy Vyman, with a Patterson, it's going to be a difficult decision. But Thomas Callas for me, patch man of the match.
Yeah, I think I can't disagree with you. I would have a close second would have been Bakinson, even though he's only on the pitch for 30, 35 minutes. Just the way he developed into the game and came into the game with natural ease. Last week it was Semenya and Bakinson coming on, and Semenya obviously got the goal and looked good. This week Bakinson was the young player that shone. Dean, any other names to throw into the hat for you?
No, I thought it was fitting that Callas scored the goal as well, and I thought he was dominant at the back. Up to one point, I was going to give it to Bentley, and that's never a good sign when your goalkeeper's man of the match at home. That's for sure. Bakinson, that's the first time I really did appreciate the physicality of the guy. I think he's certainly a presence. He's clearly comfortable on the ball. For the others, as I said, they did grow into the game. I mean, Jack Hunt got forward towards the end, but no, I think Callas was the man of the match in terms of that. But that just shows you, doesn't it, how much that they were dominating play at one stage when our centre half is man of the match. I was a little bit. I'm sure we're going to talk about the guys that weren't included. I'd like to have an answer. We've got an answer on De Silva, of course, but I'd like to have an answer on Morrell. I was really surprised. he wasn't on the bench. I didn't see his performance for Wales in the week, but by all accounts, I know you guys have been watching him closely. He's played really well for Wales.
Yeah, he played 90 minutes.
Strange
looking on Twitter, a lot of good feedback. I'm clinging on to the fact that Patch's sort of comment there, you know, we've got a game Wednesday, and he was resting from that. He may have picked up something, you don't know, but it was a surprise for me, the Morel one.
I can only think it's down to the fact that we've got Masengo and we've got Bakinson coming into that spot. You know, he has played 180 minutes in the space of 72 hours. I honestly think, and I hope, it was just a resting thing. We've got, just discussed Kalas and a captain's performance. Matt, obviously we were pushing for Taylor Moore to be captain. Happy to settle for Kalas for now?
Yeah. Especially if he puts in performances like that. It's funny, you know, I think we talked about Kalas and I don't see him or haven't seen him as a talker. And someone that you know, is what Dean was talking about, that example on and off the pitch. I thought it was quite funny when Gregor said it. I don't know if you saw Gregor's comment about he followed him into the Ashton Gate Stadium with Kalas driving his F1 McLaren. So we're obviously paying the bucks down there. But yeah, I'm happy with that. You know, I want a captain who's going to play week in, week out. And my fear was that, probably more so with Taylor, is that it might detract from his game, whereas Kalas is a Czech international, so he should be used to it. So, yeah, I think it's the right choice.
I'm a bit of a traditionalist with that. I like to see a centre-half, the spine of the side as a captain. I mean, going back to Sean Taylor and Lewis Carey and people like that. It was interesting. I've never got the impression that Kalas is a big talker on the pitch, no. But during the commentary, I don't know if you noticed, or before commentary, Callum O'Dowda said that he is a presence in the dressing room, whether he's saying the right thing on Robin's TV, of course, but he said he is a leader and a presence in the dressing room, and it will be a popular choice. So I think if anything, if today's performance from him goes, you know, if he's going to shoulder the burden like that, then I think it's a good move.
Yeah. I think when they came out for the second half, I don't know if you noticed, he had his arm round Masengo.
Yeah,
giving him a few talking points, and I've never seen that before. But I've never really been looking for it, I don't think.
Yeah.
No, and maybe the camera picked up on it. But yeah, I was going to say exactly the same thing. And he seemed to be talking in quite detailed about, you know, little, you know, whatever it was. But that's good to see. You want to see that from your captain. You know, you do want a leader, and I think that's something we've missed in the squads of Lee Johnson. I think Chris Brunt will bring that to it. I think Chris Martin obviously brings that to it. I think Joe Williams may bring some of that to it as well. I think he's that kind of type of character.
I think you said it, Matt. I've been listening to a lot of the chats during lockdown, of course. And one thing that's come to mind is, all right, Corey Smith was a leader and a character, but we've all, our successful sides have had those strong, you know, characters, the Aidan Flints and whatever. But I don't know if we had it in depth. I mean, we didn't seem anybody to get hold of it, to boss it. Now, you're bringing in lads, as I said, with the experience of Brunt, Chris Martin. They've been there. They've done it. Joe Williams, by all accounts, was a strong character in the Wigan dressing room. So I think Dean Holden's actually... you know, got hold of that. I don't know if you heard the chat in the week with Steve Scott. He said that, you know, Lee Johnson was perhaps reluctant to have those strong characters in the changing room. And, you know, and well, let's see how that works out with Dean Holden. It's always a risk because, you know, he's relatively inexperienced himself. So as long as things are going well, characters always work, don't they? But we did need that. And I think these lads have come on board, and I think they're going to, they can only offer their experience to the likes of, you know, Masengo and the youngsters. I think it is a good move.
Yeah.
We've mentioned quite a few players here that didn't even feature today. So let's talk first of all about Alfie Mawson, who is someone who signed from Swansea for £20 million last year and had an injury and featured a little bit for Fulham. And now he's with us for a season-long loan. Surely he's got to be starting alongside, I would think, Taylor Moore and Thomas Kalas. From as soon as he's fit, and he was on the bench today, I think. So he should be starting, you'd think, for Viner maybe. So it's Viner or Moore, isn't it? And I think probably Viner for me. Dean first.
Yeah,
Sorry. Well, on today's performance, I think Taylor Moore's got to be looking over his shoulder as well. No, Mawson, you're paying those kind of wages. I mean, I immediately reached out to a Fulham friend of mine, and he said, listen, when he came, we just thought he was going to set the world on fire. He said, but unfortunately, it didn't work out for us because of his injuries. But we can see of what he's done in the past. I always remember watching him for Barnsley and Swansea and thinking that's the kind of player we need, a proper modern centre back who's going to play the ball out. So yeah, I think he's going to come in, and slot in. But I think because of the formation we're playing, those three at the back, they are so important. They're not just your traditional centre halves now. You're going to have at least one of them having to fill into the midfield on a regular basis. So they've all got to be comfortable on the ball, haven't they?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it would be Mawson and Callas with more of that marauding Adam Webster type player. Matt, thoughts for you on Mawson?
Yeah, I mean, it would be for me. I personally, and he didn't have a bad game today other than the clearance, but I hate to be critical, really, but I don't think Zach Viner is good enough for a top six championship side. Squad player, but that is being critical, because I thought today he was better than Taylor Moore today. Unfortunately, the mistake he made, and it wasn't his total mistake. I mean, the ball should have been in the box, but his clearance was nowhere near effective enough. But he also created a number of good opportunities. So I think it could be either or. It wouldn't surprise me if on that basis it was Taylor who dropped out and Zach kept his place. But I also don't know how fit or how close Mawson is to starting, because there is a difference between starting a game and coming on sort of 20 minutes. So,
as my dad always said, if you're fit enough to be on the bench,
it's the old adage, but I don't know that it applies anymore, Patch. I really don't. I do think they look at it and think we'll get 20 minutes out of them, or Mawson probably. I don't know what other options they had defensively that could have been there. But it's an interesting one. You would expect that the three would be Mawson, Callas, and probably Taylor Moore.
Well, when we're playing every 3 or 4 days, it's good to have that.
Isn't it? Yeah.
It's very, very much a squad game this time around.
Well, he was the only natural defender on the bench, if you think about it. So, I mean, there's a high probability of him having to come on, whether he wanted to come on or not. So, I shouldn't think he's too far away.
Yeah. The one that I'm really interested in, and when it was first mentioned, I thought, great player, coming to the end of his career, great left foot, where does he fit in for us? So that's my question.
It's new game, is it?
Where do we fit in with Chris Brunt?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. He's played wing back, he's played centrally, he's played wide left. I think a lot of it comes down to, again, his experience, his professionalism.
Just too good an opportunity to not have.
Well, I think, and I think Dean sort of has articulated that there were the players he's got, he's been after for a little while. But I do think that, some of those players, it's like Wilbraham and Wade Elliott in that season. They're invaluable. You know, they've got that experience. What he may bring for the youngsters. I think he will come in. We don't know how bad Jada Silva's injury is. It's his shin, and I think it was last season, was it his tib-fib that he...
Yeah.
Hopefully it's not that, but Brunt may then come in from that point of view. So I'm really pleased with it. And I'll always go back to, if Swansea fans were looking at Corey Smith and wondering, oh, he might, you know, he's had his injuries in... Yeah. There wouldn't have been many that wouldn't have rated Corey and thought it was a good move for them. I think every post I've read about Chris Brunt and Chris Martin has been positive posts. One, a couple of West Brom fans were saying they'd have given him a 15-year contract because they thought he was that good. And they were going to really miss him. You know.
The other thing about Chris Brunt as well is, of course, he's a dead ball specialist. And I think that's something we have been like, oh, Pato's... You know, he's had a couple of beauties recently, but that left footed. He is left footed. He's another tin man, isn't he? I think that they talk about, sign this guy just for his dead ball delivery and things like that. And that's such an important part of certainly Championship football as well. We can see that. If you need somebody to ping the ball in, you know, in the last minute and put it on, you know, Martin's head, that he's the man to do it. I think it does come back to character. I mean, he's one of those players when I've always watched Match of the Day and whatever, and I've always thought, there's a guy who gives 100%. He looks like he's involved in the game. He looks like he's contesting things. And that's probably the guy that we do need. So whether he's happy to come and be in and around the squad, I don't think Dean Holden would have, you know, said you're going to play 40 games a season. I'm sure not. But I wasn't that disappointed, I must admit. If we're going to sign a 35-year-old, he would be, you know, one at top of the list for me.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, I'm excited to see him in a City shirt. Excited to see him strike a ball in anger for the first time. Hopefully it's a screamer into the top corner, but we'll see.
Well, did you see his right foot screamer in training?
Yeah.
I think Tins was all left foot. I think Tins even struggled to stand on his right, but yeah, at least Brunt, he can strike a ball on his right.
And then what do we know about Stephen Sessegnon? Obviously a right back, right wing back. He's cover / competition for Jack Hunt. I always call Nicky Hunt Jack.
Don't do that to us. Although he's still playing, to be fair. I'll defer to Dean on Sessegnon, because I genuinely, other than knowing his brother's Ryan and he was at Fulham, I know nothing about him.
You've got Fulham connections there, Dean.
Yeah, I did. I season ticket holder, a friend of mine at Fulham. He just said, look after him. He said he's a good, he called him the wonder kid. Right. He hasn't played the number of games probably we want for somebody to come in and slot straight in, but clearly there's someone with potential there. He said no. He's very good going forward. You know, defensive side, as we probably could tell. I mean, I'm sure that will be coached. But no, he's very excited. There was no indication that we're gonna sign him on. He said no, we want him back. Look after him. He said it's a big season for him. If we can give him the opportunity. And I think it's a win-win situation then, isn't it? I mean, if we come to the end of the season and we're desperate to sign him, then he's had a wonderful season for us. I think, you know, it's the Jack Hunt is another enigma. I mean, that guy can, as I said, he can turn a game sometimes, but other times he's almost like a liability. Yeah. Today, we saw almost Jack Hunt
good and bad.
In one game. Good and bad. Yeah. He came into his own later on when he was freed up. So I think Sessegnon is a great, great signing. Somebody said on one of the forums, you know, we've waited weeks and weeks for signings, and then we get two or three in the space of two or three days. But now, if we look back on it, I think it was good business all round.
Yeah. Absolutely. So I was going to say next game, does Bakinson start for you? But the next fixture is Northampton on a Wednesday night in the Carabao Cup. So the team's going to change, you to think, anyway. You're going to see a few changes naturally. But if someone plays in that game and plays really well, then they're in contention for Saturday. But let's just pretend that we're not playing Northampton on Wednesday and we're going straight into the next game on next Sunday against Stoke. Does Bakinson start for you first, Matt?
Probably on that performance, yes. I think, again, you have to look at the physicality and what he brought. Actually, and apologies because I am going to get back to Wednesday in Northampton. I'd play him against Northampton. I'd play Mawson. They need games to play. So give Sessegnon a run as well. You know, it's a game we want to win. Of course it is. But yeah, play him. And if they come through that, same with Joe Morrell, then yeah, I mean, you have to say on the, what was it, 55 minutes, 60 minutes that Hanoa played compared to the, you know, 30, 35 minutes that Bakinson played. And that's not being critical of Hanoa, because I think he was overrun. I think he was being asked to do too much against a very good footballing side. So yeah, in answer to your question, Patrick, I would be playing him next week. Yeah.
Okay, and Dean, any other changes for you for the next starting 11 in the league game?
Well, I'd like to see the new boys involved. I think not that I'm going to be able to see it. I can't watch it from here in South Africa, unfortunately, because of the AFL conditions. But I'm hoping that they'll
send you the goals. We'll send you the goals.
Well, thank you. Yeah, no, let's hope there's a few as well. I just love listening to Radio Bristol from here in South Africa. It gives me that sense of being closer to home, you know.
Yeah.
But no, joking aside, I think if we can introduce the new lads in, I really am keen for Joe Morrell and obviously Liam Walsh when he's fit to get involved as much as possible. But no, I think that's the point of the Carabao Cup. I think, all right, we've got Villa potentially in the round after, but we've got a lot of players. We've got to work out whether they're going to be part of this squad before, obviously, the transfer window closes. Because as Dean Holden said, it's not just about bringing players in. Perhaps we're going to be moving some on. And we haven't mentioned, of course, the big elephant in the room, which is Casey Palmer.
Yeah.
Is that the last time we've seen him in a Bristol City shirt, perhaps? I don't know. I mean, not to be on the bench today. What was that all about?
When did we last see him in a Bristol City shirt? I don't know if we've seen him in a Bristol City shirt.
I'm not sure. See him in training enough.
Yeah. I'm not sure from a lockdown point of view how much he featured. I mean, he had an injury, didn't he, I think, early on. But again, I mean, you know, I make no bones. I'm a Taylor Moore fan, but I'm a massive Casey Palmer fan. And I think a little bit like Sam Smodix. You know, I've got mates who are Peterborough season ticket holders, and they were begging me, not that I had any influence, to get Sam Smodix back for them because they thought he's fantastic. I think he played 70 minutes for us. Now, you know, everyone said what a lovely character he is and everything else. Well, you've got to give these players a chance. And for me, Casey Palmer's a case in point, excuse the pun. But you also don't know, thanks mate, yeah. You also don't know the attitude. So, there may be other things with it. I'd like to think not, and I really hope we do keep him because I think he could absolutely rip this division up. But the Bakinson one, I think, is probably a quandary because most City fans would have thought he would go out on another loan, probably League One, maybe a lower Championship, a Rotherham or a Wickham. Now you're looking at it thinking, I'm not sure I'm letting him go. And maybe with what we've seen, does Adam Nash allow to leave?
That's another one. I didn't think about that. I mean, you've got Nash as well. You could use the excuse he also played internationals in the week, but surely playing international football is good preparation because we've now got players who are up to speed. I mean, I don't know whether that's an excuse or not, but if you go back to Casey Palmer, it reminds me of the Smodix thing. If Smodix was not on the bench, then you automatically think then he's perhaps there's a move being lined up. And I've got a feeling that perhaps Dean Holden would have bought into maybe Lee Johnson's thought that can the guy be trusted over a season? I don't know, but which is a massive shame because as I said, he was ripping it up at the start of last year, wasn't he?
You've got to allow him though, Dean, as well, haven't you? I mean, you know, you called the Birmingham pass for Tommy Rowe's goal. The pass for Josh Brownhill's goal against Charlton. There's not another player in the squad that does that. And I keep going back to the point, for me, whenever Casey Palmer started, and probably a degree with Sam Smodix, they probably felt the pressure. They had to produce something. You know, we've seen plenty of games with Pato, Andy Vyman, where they've not really done too much, and yet they're still in the team. I just feel Casey Palmer's not been given any kind of fair opportunity, but that's on the basis of what I see match days. I don't know what goes on in training or anything else. So
totally agree with you, Matt. I mean, it's all about being given the chance. I mean, that's why I was desperate to see him involved today, so we at least see him in that system. But just thinking about it, just think about the start of that game today. You had Masengo being overrun. You had obviously, you know, a worker like Vyman who was struggling. You had Pato who was non-existent in that sort of patches of the first half. Where would Palmer have been able to play in that?
Yeah,
he'd have been lost, wouldn't he?
Yeah, he would have been in that kind of that kind of system. Yeah, absolutely. But I think, I mean, I was surprised he didn't come on the pitch at Exeter against Exeter.
Yeah, I agree.
And again, you know, there may be other things with it.
Could start
the one for me is Joe Morrell.
Wednesday. Palmer could start on Wednesday.
Yeah, he could. You know, I'd like to think.
As could Eliasson. We haven't even spoken about Eliasson, who was our number one pick for the team this time, like last year.
But if out of the three of us, would any of us play Nick Eliasson as a left wing back? And would any of us play Nick Eliasson in midfield when we've talked about the depth of midfield we've got? No, we haven't.
We've set a formation where we aren't fitting in the number one assist player for us in years.
And Callum O'Dowda will come into that as well. Like him, you know, not like him. And I personally do. Callum O'Dowda is going to be playing for that same. But I don't, you know, although I like the fact that Dean wants to play a set formation and players know what they're doing, you do have to change it during games. You know, you do have to see what the opposition are doing. If you are being overrun in midfield, you know, you change it around. So, and it's a squad game. You know, you called it, Patch. We're playing Saturday, Wednesday a lot this season. So I think it's just an interesting one. I really, really hope on the post-match interviews that people ask specifically about Joe Morrell. We know that Williams and Walsh are a couple of weeks away from what Dean said in his sort of pre-match press. But I'd love to know about Joe Morrell. I hate to think that he might be one that we're talking about might be going somewhere else because clubs were interested. And also Casey Palmer, because with what Dean's talking about, there aren't too many other pros then, the experienced players, that when he makes reference to wanting to go out and play games, I don't know who else he can be talking about, really.
Well,
I agree.
We've mentioned a good 20 players now that are all capable of starting for us in a league game, which is great. It's absolutely great. I wouldn't want to be Dean Holden picking that team. It's going to be an awkward one when we don't win. There's bound to be calls for we should have had this player, should have had that player. So, you know, we just got to stick with it, as we say.
Do you think, no, Patch, that a midfield three of Han Noah, Pato and Vyman works?
I personally don't.
I think it's too attacking in terms of, I don't think Pato in... Vyman works hard, but it doesn't do enough creative-wise for me. I think he gives the ball away a lot as well.
Yeah.
And as I said, I think Han Noah just got overrun. So I think that three is not the three. And it's probably not... I mean, like I said, he's bought Williams. He keeps talking about Liam Walsh, although being out of contract at the end of the year, that comes into play now. If they're having those discussions, if he's making it clear he's not intending to be here at the end of the season, then maybe you cash in now, don't you?
And you've got it. You've got it, Matt. That's the whole point. We don't know what's going on behind the scenes there. I mean, if he's got players who are unsettled and perhaps looking for a move or being told they're not part of the system, then he's trying to play players now that will be here. And I think I'm hoping it's not the case, obviously, with Liam Walsh, because, I mean, I was at that Stoke game where he came on, the famous Stoke game, and turned it on for 45 minutes. But we saw it last year in a decent Coventry side. You could see him again there playing for Coventry today and fitting in well. And I'd like to see him because he's that kind of tidy player that we do like at the gate. But no, Morrell, I think, would be a big, big shame because the guy's ready to play now. He's old enough. He's played international football. But we don't know. And the other one, of course, we haven't mentioned, of course, is Dijon. I mean, if Dean Holden's got an idea that he's not going to sign, then that's another thing. But the fact he's playing him is interesting. I think obviously he's going to get the most out of him. Until the window shuts, then we'll really see the settled side.
And I think he spoke very positively about both Fulmara and Nicolaiasen. You know, Dean's come out and said, you know, he's leaving it to Mark Ashton, but he's had very positive discussions with them. But, you know, you look at that squad and Patch, you've called it there, you know, 20-odd players we've talked about. But if you lose Fulmara, Nicolaiasen, Palmer, Walsh, then you're thinking this squad's a completely different squad again. You know, it's a tricky one.
I think we need to close the doors and not let anyone else out, and not let anyone else in, and then I think we'll be fine. But before we go, at the start of the podcast, I did say we had guests. One was Dean Allen, so thanks again, Dean. But the other was Dean Holden. So I was asked to do a few questions for a Points West article, which some of you may saw on Friday night. So let's just hand over to me asking Dean Holden some questions.
Hi, Dean. Patch Warner here, long-time City fan. How big a season is it this year for the likes of Joe Morrell, Zach Viner, Liam Walsh and Taylor Moore that have all done well elsewhere but maybe haven't had the opportunity here?
No, it's a big season for them types of guys. I think they've proved themselves elsewhere. They've all been training fantastically well in the pre-season that we've had up to now, and they'll get opportunities. While I'm in charge, young players, if they're good enough, will get the opportunity.
Matt, what do you think about that answer? I think he's basically saying that they're all going to get a chance.
Yeah, I don't know how he's going to fit them all in. I think he's already proved that with Zach Viner from the moment he got the job, to be fair. Zach's probably played as many minutes as most of the other players. Taylor Moore, I'm glad, because you know what a fan of Taylor's I am. The Liam Walsh one, I was asked to do a few questions for the Evening Post, or the Bristol Post, rather. as were a number of fans, and pretty much to a man and a woman, they said the person they're most looking forward to seeing play was Liam Walsh. So I think a lot of us are in that boat. I really hope he gets a look in. But I think he's already surprised us. You know, Antoine Semenyo is featured and scored. Tyreek today, who, you know, was arguably your man of the match, certainly, you know, had a good game. So I think he's going to be true to his word, Dean. I think he will definitely give the youngsters a chance, Patch. Right.
And I still even think that there's a chance for Max O'Leary. Should Bentley have a bad run or get injured, I think this could also be Max O'Leary's season. So, yeah, great season for the youngsters to come through. Really, really good to see. Right, let's go on to question two.
I'm just wondering if there's anything you're going to be looking to do differently that's going to set us apart from previous seasons where we struggle for that level of consistency and also that final push at the end of the season?
We're trying to create a high-performance environment at the club where the players and staff want to come every day and actually really want to come and push themselves every day. And we all put demands on each other, but ultimately it's about waking up in the morning and feeling like you really want to go in there. So, as I say, it's creating that environment where people feel part of something special. I said to the players and the staff on day one, I'm not interested in your hierarchy, whether you're the star player or whether you're supposedly down at the bottom end of the tree in terms of jobs. It's everybody's the same in my eyes. We respect each other and we pull each other through the tough times. And the championship season, there's going to be some tough times. And that's just a fact. So it's about how we deal with them and it's about how we stay calm in the moment and keep pulling everybody along on, you know, with our supporters on that journey to success.
And the answer from that question, I mean, is he saying that that wasn't the case the last few years? It's a bit of a funny one. I was looking for a change in maybe the training regime or something that was going to kick us on, because we have drifted off the last few seasons, haven't we?
It does make you wonder, doesn't it? I mean, I think there's been a few comments that Dean's made, which has probably made you think more about what he's not said. That has given you a bit of insight what's gone on. I think he's right. It's the old sort of adage of the tea lady is just as important as your number nine. I mean, I'm not sure that's the case unless she's got a sweet left foot. But it is one of those. Yeah, I do think he's. You know, we've met sort of Dean Patch, and he's a very, very honest guy. He strikes you as what you see is what you get. I think a lot of the feedback that you've seen from players, you know, throughout pre-season, Callum O'Dowda today talking about it. You know, I think he is going to endear players to him because of the way that he is, which I don't think was, you know, was a trait that Lee Johnson had. I think there were one or two that Lee, you know, the likes of Josh Brownhill, I'm sure Josh Brownhill would speak very highly of him, but there were probably more players that felt they saw the wrong side of Lee Johnson, and I'm not sure that Dean's like that. Don't get me wrong, I think he will tell players when they've got to step up. I don't think he's any way a yes man or anything like that, but I think he's more of a man manager than Lee would be. But you're right, it would have been interesting to see if he'd said, I'm going to change this, I'm going to change that. Maybe that was part of the problem, Patch. Maybe the atmosphere. You know, I think it was clear in Lee's tenure as a fan that he didn't get the best out of the big players. He had a number of fallings out. I don't think that's the way Dean Holden will operate. I think even players that are unhappy, he would be honest with them and would allow them to, you know, seek other opportunities if that's the case.
Mm. Yeah, no, it's going to be an interesting one. And obviously, hopefully, we keep pedaling all the way to the end of the season. I don't think there's going to be it would be interesting to see if there's the streakiness that we've seen under Lee Johnson. But, you know, let's see. Time will tell.
I think every championship, you know, every side in the championship, even Leeds last season, you will go on a run of games where you don't pick up the wins. And it's how he reacts. But I think also as fans, we've got to be realistic with it as well. You know, some of what went on when Lee Johnson went on those runs wasn't right from a support point of view. But I also don't think Dean would be given the luxury of 8-9 games losses. You know, he's realistic to know that, I'm sure.
Let's not forget he's only on a 12-month contract as well.
Exactly. I mean, I know it's rolling and you don't know, but that's part of that, is that if it doesn't work out, they've got options there, haven't they? But, I like a lot of what he says. I've not listened to his post-match interview. I've listened to Thomas Callis's, and I don't know if you've listened to that. which was brilliant. He came out and said, I think the question was, how proud are you to, you know, captain the side on that victory? And his first comment was, yeah, really proud, but let's not kid ourselves. Anybody watching that knows it wasn't good enough. Which, you know, would have been really easy to come out and say, Cov are a really good side, they play good football, we got the win, it was important. He didn't, you know. So that's a good start for me. He's seen it how we've seen it. You know, there's a lot of things to work on there. But it's the first game of the season and the win's the win, isn't it? So
absolutely.
Yeah.
Guys, I've got a hard stop at 6, but okay. I wanted to just give Dean a bit of time on. You've got a really exciting project coming up next Sunday. Tell us a little bit about A, why you're in South Africa, and B, what this project is before we close the podcast.
Well, yeah, a lot of people are probably thinking, what am I doing? You know, spending a Saturday afternoon watching Bristol City, but yeah, you know, I'm stuck with them, afraid. So wherever I am in the world, I you know, they're my team. I first came to South Africa in the mid 90s, actually, guys, and you know, I left a boring office job and I decided to go back to university, and that's where everything changed. So I went on to do a master's degree and a PhD down here. And I suppose my specialist area is South African history. So I've always been here on and off for the last 20 years or so. And one of the most exciting things that happened, well, 10 years ago, as you remember, is the FIFA World Cup down here, 2010. And I was involved in the research to do with the Legacy Project, because South Africa spent so much money on that tournament, and it was really controversial. I mean, a country with so many problems, social and economic, to spend billions of dollars that it did on hosting a football tournament. So 10 years on now, we're sort of still reflecting whether it was worth it. So I put together a presentation that I'm going to be talking about next Sunday online. I'm going to be reflecting on the kind of things we found out at the time. And, you know, I was lucky enough at the time to interview some of the high rollers, and some, there was quite some controversial findings. And so, yeah, that's what I'm going to be doing next week. So it'll be quite interesting.
How can people, can anyone come along to that? Because it's virtual. How do we get involved? How can we see it?
No, please do. I'll share stuff on my social media. But if you just go into a portal called Quicket, Quicket, you'll be able to buy tickets there. It's only about, I think with the exchange rate, it's about £3 a ticket, which is wonderful for my British friends. Like I say, I'm really looking forward to that, because I'm putting together all the kind of findings. And I mean, I had such an interesting time in 2010. I mean, I was listening to Stanley on the other podcast. It was one of his World Cups that he went to. I mean, I was here. And it really wasn't about the football. It was, for me, it was about the way the country came together. It was quite incredible. Even the biggest critics of it. It was a month-long party. I mean, they put on an incredible show, but they also built infrastructure that we're still enjoying today. I mean, the bus service, for example, in Cape Town was created that we hadn't had before. And we've got world-class stadiums. I mean, my claim to fame was I actually watched three games. The first three games, I didn't see a goal. Do you remember those?
Yeah.
which I mean, I've watched enough Bristol City matches.
I was going to say, you're used to that, yeah.
yeah, to watch some rubbish, but to have no goals in three games was quite a feat. It was quite cagey, the early rounds, but then it all came alive. I was there when the Germans did a job on Argentina, Messi and all. I mean, it was quite a privilege to be here. So, yeah but we're going to be talking next week about the organisation behind it and the kind of money that was spent. And the fact that at the time, Sepp Blatter was just calling the shots, if you remember, and he wanted this tournament for Africa. And he came down and demanded that stadiums were built and things like that. So, I'm looking forward to it. Yeah, so for any of the listeners, please do join us next week. It's Sunday. I think it's 5 o'clock UK time.
Yeah, that sounds great. And I'll definitely be trying to get onto that. That sounds awesome. And for those who don't know, obviously this is the bonus show, all about Bristol City. So we've got our regular show, which is up to sort of episode 128 now. We've been going 5 years. So Dean, it would be really good to get you on that show and talk a bit more about South Africa and why you're there, your roots in Bristol, that sort of stuff. So hopefully that's okay with you. We can get that one sorted too.
I'll be delighted. Well, I'm actually, I should say I'm not from Bristol. I'm a West Somerset boy. I was actually born in Minehead, would you believe? And,
there we go. Yes. Me and Matt were in Minehead, weren't we?
So you've let people think, yeah.
Thank you, you ambassadors for the town. I think you had a good time, didn't you? And not much goes on there, so it was quite nice that you went down there and added to the excitement.
Absolutely, it was fantastic. Somewhere I haven't been since I was for about 30 years, And yeah, the seafront, they spent a lot of money on that. Some real nice places. Dunster Village just down the road was lovely. So yeah, I would highly recommend Minehead, and maybe we'll explore that a bit more when we get you on the podcast.
We will do. The disadvantage, of course, of Sporting Bristol City coming from there, you had an hour-long drive home to sort of go through everything. And it wasn't I remember, you know, driving on that sort of road from Bridgewater to Minehead, it was a long time to contemplate things, having supported them as long as I have.
Right. Shame we didn't have the podcast.
I meant to be spending New Year's Eve in Dunster Patch. So.
Oh, very nice. Very posh.
Not that I think that will happen, but yeah.
Brilliant. Right, chaps, thank you very much. We're almost up to the magical hour mark. It's been great. We've got the 3 points we wanted. That's the end. That's the story at the end of the podcast. We've got the 3 points. On to Wednesday. We'll be back Wednesday with the bonus show, City versus Northampton. I think you might be frequenting Warner Towers for that one.
I will be at Warner Towers. Thank you for the offer, yeah.
Brilliant. Okay, we'll chat then. And Dean, we'll set up a date. And if not, well, either way, we'll be hopefully listening to you next Sunday.
No, pleasure, guys. Thanks for having me.
Nice to speak to you, Dean.
Take care, everyone.
Take care, guys.
Bye-bye. And burn, and the wheels keep spinning round and around and around. This time you're a fonder, wonder what love means, what love is. This time you're a fonder, wonder what love means, what love is. What is love? Yeah.